The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
But we appreciate everybody's patience, and I bid all of you a good Sabbath from the Eternal Church of God. Let's go ahead and turn over to Matthew 16. Matthew and the 16th chapter to begin the sermon today. Last week, I had given a message discussing the devil in the details of social media. And in that message, I related how the spread of information, the spread of disinformation on all social media platforms is being done methodically, and it seems quite intentionally, not necessarily always from those people that are in charge of those platforms, but we know the devil is in the details. And needless to say, the lack of honest and fair reporting from nearly every news outlet today is another epidemic or pandemic that greatly contributes to the lies and to the deceit and the corruption that is happening in this country and around the world. And it seems that fewer and fewer people can be trusted to tell us the whole truth and nothing but. And it's becoming increasingly difficult, therefore, to find people of integrity. Uprightness and truth are values that Americans and people in general worldwide no longer strive to have or to maintain. I cannot say all Americans, but many. Dishonesty and corruption is so widespread today that we have become accustomed to it. We're used to it. It's expected today, even among those people in charge of companies, corporations, and of the country. Rex Tillerson is the former U.S. Secretary of State, and he addressed the Virginia Military Institute, where he shared his concern over this growing crisis of integrity, a crisis of ethics and morality. And he said this in his address. He said, "If our leaders seek to conceal the truth, or we as people become accepting of alternative realities that are no longer grounded in facts, then we as American citizens are on a pathway to relinquishing our freedom. A responsibility of every American citizen," he said, "is to preserve and protect our freedom by recognizing what truth is and is not, what a fact is and is not, and to begin by holding ourselves accountable to truthfulness and demand our pursuit of America's future be fact-based, not based on wishful thinking, not hoped-for outcomes made in shallow promises, but with a clear-eyed view of the facts as they are guided by the truth that will set us free to seek solutions to our most daunting challenges." And I think that was very well said by Rex Tillerson. And while every person is not born with a moral compass, we all have the capacity for moral reasoning, even from childhood. Now, it should be needless to say, but many people are not hearing, are not adhering to this truth that Mr. Tillerson had addressed the students at Virginia Military Institute, that integrity is an invaluable asset. Now, so we, as Christians, must learn to have integrity, and we must never let it go, never let it down. And so important is integrity that Christ said this in Matthew 16, verse 24. He said to his disciples, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Meaning to make sacrifices, to do what is right, even to our own hurt, and follow Christ. "For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul or his own life? Or what will a man give in exchange for his life? Well, the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works. So our entire life's accomplishments are summed up by Christ in this term called works. And this is much more than simply holding a job. It's more than simply mowing the lawn or doing housework. It's included, of course. But it is our behavior. It is our activities, both within the family, with friends, at the workplace, with coworkers. Our interaction, even with strangers, is included in this thing Christ called works. And so everything we do is being considered by God, because he is selecting a chosen few to become his dream team, if you will, his personal sons and daughters. Now, the Apostle Paul added a bit more detail to this judgment that Christ spoke of when he said that we must all appear before, and this is in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. You do not need to turn there, but I'm just going to quote him. He said, "We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad." Whether good or bad, according to our works. And this means that everything that you and I do in life, it either counts for us in our favor or against us. Michelle, this is getting quite kind of hot. If you could maybe turn it down a little bit, I'm on the verge of feedback. Everything we do counts either for us or against us. And what this means, therefore, is that a person's integrity is at the core of everything we do, every decision we make, and how we perform our job, how we manage our family, how we grow in grace and knowledge, and how we have relationships with one another. The relationships we have, the quality of those relationships. Now, the potential problem here, found in the vast majority of people that have human nature, as everybody does, the potential problem is that people tend to compromise integrity when it comes to perceived loss or a perceived gain. They will compromise. They'll fudge a little bit. They'll bend the rules. They'll twist the truth just a little bit, just to help me out here. Human nature wants what it wants. And we don't like it when we don't get our way. We don't like it when we don't have the things that we desire. And so people have a tendency to skew the facts, to bend the truth to their own benefit. But consider what we had just read, that people, and we in particular, I'm talking mostly about the Church of God here, the ones who are called, that have an opportunity to become born-again sons and daughters of God, that we are going to be judged by this very thing that has become a crisis in the world today. Integrity. Psalm 15. There are so many stories in the news over the last 10, 20 years or more that I can't even begin to illustrate how the lack of integrity has affected and, infected career politicians, corporate CEOs, CFOs, and not just those in charge, those people below them as well. The corruption and the deceit found throughout the fabric of society today runs deep. And like I said at the beginning, we expect people to lie to us today. We expect there to be deceit. And it's like almost not a big deal anymore. But then people complain when it's found out. But you let it slide all these years. What's going on? We expect news agencies to twist the truth. We expect a misquote of facts. We expect leaving out information that, you know, because we expect people to have an agenda, their own agenda, that might not fit what is for the greater good of society, although they think it is. And it's sad to see how so much of the news that is published throughout this country and throughout the world today is published by sources that were once reputable but cannot be trusted anymore. You know, these were big names like CNN and MSNBC, the LA Times, the New York Times, the Washington Post. So many of them are publishing story after story that falls into the category of propaganda today, that you can't trust it. Democracy itself, we see, is now facing a crisis of integrity. We have at least six states that are being challenged in the most recent election for President of the United States and some other things that were included in the voting process. At least six states where eyewitnesses saw poll workers backdating ballots. Illegal. The secretary of one state actually pushed the deadline against the law. She pushed the deadline of her own free will almost here. We saw that people were not verifying signatures, that they were instructed by supervisors of ballot counting to ignore discrepancies, that they were told to push through the ballots despite the notice of questionable validity. And we also see that nearly 10,000 people in one area, it says, were able to vote even though they were dead, that they seemed to be able to cast a vote. Now, frankly, hearing all of these stories, I'm not surprised. Are any of us surprised at all of the corruption in the voting process and quote-unquote democracy today? No, we're not surprised, even though it's very sad. It's very sad to see. But it's not surprising considering the contempt of those people who hate the current president of the United States. It's almost like they'll go to, you know, nothing's being held back to try to get him out of office. Still, it is deeply troubling to us. We are citizens of this country that once had great moral values. America was considered a nation whose citizens and its leaders vastly had integrity for centuries. This was the case, but not any longer. People don't trust America. Other nations don't trust America any longer. And so my message for us today is that we live here. And this is not just in America. We're seeing some of the effects here, but it's happening all over the world. And we can't allow this crisis of integrity to affect any one of us. And when we consider all of the corruption, all of the deceit, all of the backroom deals, everything that's going on today, the misinformation, the disinformation, the misrepresentation of the truth, we might look at how we behave and the things we do and think, wow, we look pretty good. We look pretty good in comparison to everything else that's taking place throughout the world. And so as those outside the church of God become worse, we might allow ourselves to think, well, we look good, and we might allow ourselves a little wiggle room. Maybe let things slip a little bit. Just a little deceit, a little, just tiny, it's minor. A little what they call a white lie, as if there is such a thing. And yet, when we do this, if people do it, they'll still think, comparatively, I look pretty good. But we cannot use the behaviors of others to evaluate where we stand in the eyes of God. The standard is always Christ, and the standards that he has are holy, holy standards. And God, when he says he's going to judge people according to their works, whether they're good or bad, this doesn't mean he's going to grade on a curve. That comparatively, you were pretty good, Terry, so you're doing A-okay. Compared to what? Compared to what age? It's not how it's going to work. No. God's standards are stable. They don't fluctuate depending on the age in which you live. Now consider one of the first psalms written for the temple, written for its musicians and its singers. David was inspired by God to consider this issue of integrity. And to create Psalm 15. Psalm 15, because it is so vitally important to our salvation. It's written, in fact, I don't know about your Bible, mine has a subheader here of Psalm 15, the character of those who may dwell with the Eternal. A Psalm of David. Eternal, who may abide in your tabernacle? Good question. Who may dwell in your holy hill? Good question. And here's the answer. He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He who does not backbite or slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Eternal. He who swears or makes a commitment, even if it means to his own hurt, it says, and does not change. He who does not put out his money at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things shall never be moved. Why? Because God's laws cannot be moved. They are firm. He is called a rock. He said in the book of through the prophet Malachi, I change not. His laws don't change depending on the situation, depending on what age in which we live. No, all of these qualities that we read in Psalm 15, they are all directly related to integrity. It's honesty. It's always speaking the truth. It's living by every word of God, not just some of them or the ones that, you know, are we're okay with, the ones that don't discomfort us. No, it's every word. And it's not slandering others, as it says. It's having respect for other individuals. It's not skewing a situation or manipulating the details, the facts, for personal gain or to avoid loss. It's doing good to all people. Fulfilling our promises, as it says. Swearing to our own hurt, our commitments to others. Fulfilling those, even if it means that we might suffer some kind of loss or some kind of harm or discomfort. Now, sadly, I've seen people who claim to be Christian that have been or are regular attendees of the Church of God who have made commitments to others and did not fulfill them because to do so meant they might be put out. Is that what God is looking for? Is that who he wants? People that say are, you know, situational ethics, as it's referred to? And yet, well, compared to those outside the church, some of these people might think, I still look pretty good. I'm keeping the Sabbath. I'm paying my tithe. I observe the holy days. I don't eat unclean meat. But there's more to it than that. So how we view ourselves, the point is, how we view ourselves is not important. How God views us is what we should be concerned with. How do we look in God's eyes? James chapter 1. James 1. So a few examples here. We have the Ten Commandments, and we know what they are. We know that we should not fornicate or commit adultery, and maybe we're not doing that. But you know what some people do? Well, they allow their computer or their handheld device to drift on over to explicit websites. Maybe look at some pornographic or near pornographic material fondly. Maybe people might use their imagination to ponder, well, what would it be like to fornicate or commit adultery and kind of dwell on those thoughts for a while. We might not be stealing from the cash register or from, you know, a place of business where we work, but, you know, do we cheat a little bit at work? Maybe take extended breaks, extended lunches without approval from our supervisor. Maybe we clock out at 5, but we kind of leave at 4:45, you know. That's robbery from your employer. You know, maybe we choose not to give God his rightful 10%. And God says that's stealing. That's breaking the commandment. He said, you've stolen from me. You've robbed me, actually, technically. He said, you've robbed me in tithes and offerings. You know, God says it's robbery, and yet some people are pretty comfortable with that. That's okay. It's okay to cheat on your taxes a little bit. I have a few statistics about that in a moment. We might not be out murdering people, right? Killing people. But are we slandering others? Are we gossiping about other people? Relating to them how bad they are when we don't really even know the entire situation ourselves? Are we not giving people the benefit of the doubt? Perhaps we say that we're keeping the Sabbath, but are we keeping it holy? Because we see a lot of people in the Church of God are not keeping the Sabbath entirely holy today. People are doing business. People are going to restaurants, having food cooked for them and having people clean up for them. People are talking about work on the Sabbath and making plans out for activities or work-related activities outside of the Sabbath. We don't use God's name in a cursive or in a uncomplimentary way. I don't think anybody in the Church of God is doing that. But do we take it vainly? Nonetheless, not behaving like a Christian should? You know, the Church of God has God's name, Church of God. We all consider ourselves members of the Church of God. We consider ourselves Christians. We have God's name. And so are we taking his name in vain by not having the integrity that a godly person should have? The Ten Commandments, my point is, the Ten Commandments are like an umbrella. They are commandments under which there are many other laws and principles and precepts that fall underneath the Ten Commandments. You know, the keeping the holy days, for example, is not listed in the Ten, not directly, but they are within that category of keeping the commandments. Other rules of personal conduct fall underneath the commandments. And so, to have integrity, we need to consider all 10 of them, and we need to consider those guidelines that God has spelled out that fall underneath them. Because like an umbrella keeps you dry or somewhat protected from the storm, so will keeping God's commandments protect us from the tumultuous times that are coming. God is like a rock. He is referred to as a shield to those who are faithful to him, to those who love him and keep his commandments. And he cannot be moved. And so his laws, we see, they are a foundation of integrity. James 1, verse 22, encourages us to be doers of the word and not hearers only. In other words, and he kind of summarizes here and explains, if you're a hearer and not a doer of the word, he ends it deceiving yourselves. You're lying to yourself. If you're saying, oh, I'm listening, I'm paying attention, but we're not doing it, we're deceiving ourselves. For if anyone, he continues, if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror, looking and going, oh, I see what I look like. I see the curves here. I might need to shave a little bit. But after he observes himself, he goes away and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. I forgot I needed to shave. Oh, forgot to keep that commandment. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does. So are we blessed in what we do? Are we? Now, I'm not talking about being showered with money, being given a promotion at work, or being given gifts or good health. I'm not talking about that kind of a blessing. To be blessed in what we do means that we're happy. We're pleased with what we do. Are we pleased with our behavior? Are we pleased with our responses to other people, with our activities, to those things that we choose to participate in and refuse to participate in? Because if we are, we can be, because we know that that was right. Doing what was right is very pleasing. It's very satisfying. We can, you know, great satisfaction and contentment can be found in doing what is right, even though there might not be some kind of immediate or tangible benefit to us. The benefit will come, and it will be tangible. But in the meantime, are you happy? Are we happy with our choices? Because God says, I change not. And this is the kind of character that we are told to have. And we're not going to change. There's not going to be situational ethics. We're not going to bend the rules depending on the situation. No matter what happens, no matter how much it might hurt or how much it might benefit us, we are not going to compromise and contribute to this growing crisis of integrity. Acts chapter 14. There was a poll taken a few years ago that revealed that one out of every five people, and this is a poll taken in America, but I'm sure this is something that it may vary somewhat depending on the place where taxes are taken from the people, but one out of every five people feel that it's okay to cheat on your taxes. Personally, I think that number is probably much higher because a lot of people are not even honest when taking these polls. They don't want to look bad to the other person asking the question. They're like, oh no, we should not do that. But then they do it. A little, just a little. It's okay. And they do it because they try to justify it by saying, well, the government's corrupt. So does that mean we can be corrupt too? No. That's the crisis of integrity. Another poll had asked, if your employer was able to see your social media pages, would you change anything? 33% said, yes, they would change what they're doing or what they're saying on their social media pages. Now, this shows, you know, that's a third of the entire country has an enormous lack of integrity. That's what it shows. And at the same time, many of these people have children and they're trying to teach their kids that they should be honest and fair in every situation. Be truthful. Don't do the wrong thing. But are we being good examples to our children? You know, in recent years, I had visited a few of the high schools here in the city of Billings, and I saw an acronym that was used in some of these public high schools that was posted around the campuses. I think they still are. And this acronym was used to inspire the students. The acronym is GRIT. G-R-I-T. And what this represents, what it stands for, is growth, resilience, integrity, and tenacity. Now, these terms share a symbiotic relationship. They do. They're positive characteristics, character traits, that is, that all should reach for. Everybody should reach for. Now, interestingly, grit is also, the word grit is a term used to describe the power of passion and perseverance for the right cause. Now, all of these are admirable and honorable qualities that we should have. And it would be more than nice if everyone had grit, both in the word and in the acronym. If everybody tried to grow in grace and knowledge, to be resilient in times of adversity, to not give in, to not allow deceit or corruption, to be determined to do what is right, so that we could all maintain this thing called integrity. But that is not happening, is it? It's not happening on a national level. And the reason is because of, in my opinion, it's because of greed and because of perceived loss. You know, people and young people today are bombarded. We're all bombarded with ads, advertisements, commercials, what have you, to buy this and do that and you got to have this or you're not happy. If you're not driving this car, you won't be happy. You deserve to have these things. You deserve it. Go out and get it. And so when people don't have them, you know, they're upset. They feel incomplete because they're being told day after day, you need to have this. Oh, you need to have this to be a happy and a fulfilled individual. And so people compare themselves to the haves and the have-nots, and they want more money. Generally, people want more money. They want more stuff. And when people are faced with not having, or people are faced with losing what they do have, they'll often compromise. They'll allow themselves to be dishonest, to twist the truth, to bend the rules in order to avoid loss or to gain. Now, the Apostle Paul, consider this. The Apostle Paul endured some of the worst trials and the worst persecution that we have on record. And he spoke of himself as being beaten, of being shipwrecked, of starving, of being naked, of being stoned and left for dead. Now, one of these accounts is found in Acts 14. Acts 14, in verse 19, where it says that the Jews from Antioch and Iconium came there, and having persuaded the multitudes, they then stoned Paul and dragged him out of the city, supposing him to be dead. However, when the disciples gathered around him, he rose up and went into the city, and the next day he departed with Barnabas to Derbe. And when they had preached the gospel to that city and made many disciples, they returned to Lystra and Iconium and Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, exhorting them to continue in the faith, and saying, "We must, through many tribulations, enter the kingdom of God." Well, Paul had many tribulations, didn't he? Paul was a man on a mission. And God showed Paul what he wanted him to do. And Paul would not relent. He maintained his integrity. He stayed focused, even when faced with the loss of his own life. Now, how many of us would do the same thing? How many of us? Being stoned to the point where we were knocked out, the people thought we were dead, they drag your body outside the city and leave it there to rot. How many of us would stand up and say, "I'm going back. I'm going to continue. I am going to continue in this thing"? Now, before we raise our hand and say, "Oh, I would do that," consider if we have that kind of integrity right now in lesser situations, not as dire situations. You know, are we always honest, even with our own selves? Are we always fair to other people in everything we do? Do we fulfill our commitments to other people? And do we fulfill our commitment to God, saying, "Yes, God, I will obey you in all things"? Madison Surratt was a mathematics teacher at Vanderbilt University. He became dean of that university for a time, and he died in 1978. But one of the things that he is most remembered for was stressing the need for all students to have integrity. And one of his quotes is displayed all year round in the mathematics department, and it reads this. It states, "Today I'm going to give you two examinations, one in trigonometry and one in honesty. I hope you will pass them both. But if you must fail one, let it be trigonometry. For there are many good people in this world who cannot pass an examination in trigonometry, but there are no good people in the world who cannot pass an examination in honesty." If we were given two tests, one in trigonometry and one in honesty, I think it's safe to say that most of us probably would fail the test in trigonometry. I know I would. I mean, you learn these things in school to get through, to get a grade, to get a degree, and then you just forget them because you are not using them. But would we pass a test in honesty? Would we? Because we are being tested. You and I are being tested right now. The Apostle Peter said that judgment begins at the house of God, speaking of the church. And he said, and I quote, It begins with us. Right now. And so if we start to think, well, a little bit of dishonesty is okay, just a little bit. It's not such a big deal. You know, everybody does it. Just remember what we had read earlier, that Christ said we will be judged according to our works. And inspired by God, Paul said, whether it's good or bad. It's all being accounted for. Therefore, what manner of persons ought you and I to be in holy conduct, in godliness, when we know these things? Psalm 7, I know it can be difficult when times are tough. Many people are suffering with illness, with financial problems. Perhaps we've lost our job. Maybe we've been hurt by others. Maybe we've lost a loved one. This can make us very sad. And frankly, it can make some people very angry. And that could lead to us letting our guard down, compromising. You know, the world is becoming more and more frustrated. It's becoming more and more hostile to ethics and morality as found in the Bible. It is becoming more and more dishonest. And, you know, we might feel like, again, comparing ourselves to the world, well, we can let a little bit slip, just a little bit. If that has happened, remember something. We need to come back. We need to regain and maintain our integrity. We need to remember that everything we see happening in the world today, the way society works, the fabric of society, which is more and more corrupt, that this is all going to change one day. And you and I have an opportunity not only to experience that change, but to be a part of implementing that change throughout the nations. But in order to be chosen, we have to maintain our integrity. I had read a modern-day proverb. And it's biblically based, actually, in the author's terms. He said this. I thought it was interesting. I saw it on a documentary, and I don't remember which one, but I wrote it down because I thought that was interesting. It goes, people are unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Love them anyway. If you do good to people, they will accuse you of selfish alternative motives. Do good anyway. The biggest people with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest people with the smallest minds. Think big anyway. What you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. Give the world the best you've got, and you'll be kicked in the teeth. Give the world the best you've got anyway. It's integrity. Maintain our integrity. So we need to ask ourselves some difficult questions about the decisions that you and I make on an everyday basis. Are our decisions consistent with the desire to do good, to be good anyway, no matter what the situation is, to be good sons and daughters, good husbands and wives, good fathers and mothers, good employees or co-workers, or perhaps we have a position in the company? Are we a good boss? Do we have integrity in the workplace? Are we good members of the community, contributing positively where we can? When Tillerson addressed the class of 2018, he spoke at length about the importance of integrity in order for us to have trust of one another, to build trust and to have cooperation with one another. And he encouraged the graduating students to look for, to seek out positions in companies, places that had high standards, high moral values for personal conduct, and that rewarded those values so that there would be an incentive to do better, to do well. And the reason is because dishonesty and immorality is becoming more and more acceptable in the age in which we live. And it's the main reason for the decline of our civilization, a lack of integrity. And while technology is making great, phenomenal advancements today, going up, 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 we see integrity going down, down, down. Perhaps it's been coming for some time in smaller increments over the last few decades, but it seems like all of a sudden people are looking around and going, whoa, we're seeing some big changes in the values that once made this country great. And now we have people saying that, well, America was never great. And it's because they have lost sight of what greatness truly is. Honesty, integrity. It's not about who gets what or who's in charge. It's about this thing called integrity. Now, King David, he recognized this, and he understood that integrity was the single most important thing in a person's life. Because when all is said and done, the only thing that is going to count, the only thing that is going to be remembered, is what kind of person were we? In Psalm 7, in verse 8, it says, "The Eternal shall judge the people." And then he says, "Judge me, O Eternal, according to my righteousness, according to my integrity within me." So integrity, it means being honest, it means being fair, it means being faithful and truthful in everything, not just when it's a big deal, in everything. Because to God, everything counts. Everything is being considered. And if God knows how many hairs are on each of our head, if he knows this, he knows every time that we're not entirely honest. He knows when we are honest and when we are not. And if we want to be holy, as he is holy, it's something that's across the board. It's not just depending on the situation. It's not going to matter how big or small the situation is. We have to strive to be the same all the time. Like God says, "I change not." We say, "I'm not going to change. I am going to maintain my integrity. I won't change because of some loss or because of gain. I'm going to do the right thing just because it's the right thing to do." Fewer and fewer people are doing that today. Luke 16, seven-year-old Tanner Muncy, seven-year-old Tanner Muncy, he was the first baseman for a T-ball team in Wellington, Florida, and Tanner, during one of these games, he had fielded a ground ball, and he tried to tag a runner that was going from first to second base. Now, the umpire, whose name was Laura Benson, she called the runner out, but young Tanner immediately ran over to the umpire. He ran to her side and said, "Ma'am, I didn't tag the runner." Now the umpire reversed the call and said, "Safe. The runner is safe," and sent the runner to second base. And 2 weeks later, Laura Bunsen again was the umpire for a game that Tanner was playing. This time Tanner was playing shortstop. And this time, Benson ruled that Tanner had missed the tag of a runner that was going from second base to third. Now Tanner, he tossed the ball to the teacher, kind of looked very sad and walked back over to his position on the field. Well, Benson came over and asked Tanner and said, "What's wrong, Tanner? What's wrong?" Tanner quietly said, "Actually, I tagged the player out." The umpire's response was to declare the runner out. And of course, the other team was outraged. The coach came out onto the field, you know, yelling, "They can't do that, you can't do that, it's not fair." Well, when this coach approached the umpire, Benson explained what had happened between her and the boy 2 weeks ago. And she said this, if a kid is that honest, I have to give it to him. Now, to most, you know, this perhaps a small thing, a very small thing, but it was a big display of integrity on the part of Tanner. And we want people to give us the benefit of the doubt. We want people to trust us. And we want God to judge us by our integrity. Thus, those small and large acts that we, our works, as Christ said, are works of honesty, or perhaps are they dishonest? Our works are going to be major players in the judgment that we will receive. It's going to be a major factor when God considers who's going to hit a home run to his kingdom and who's going to be tagged, you're out. Luke 16 and verse 10, Christ said, "He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own?" He's talking about the kingdom, the true riches of God's kingdom. If we're not faithful in the least, who's going to give you something that's great? The great kingdom of God. The inheritance of the earth. You know, Christ told us to pray that we are accounted worthy to escape those things that are going to come to pass. How will we be accounted worthy? Just by praying? Or is there something else included? There is. It's integrity. Will we maintain our integrity? We're also told to watch. To watch because we do not know when the time will be. What are we to watch? The news? Social media? How many movies can we get in? No, watch your behavior. Watch your integrity. Watch yourself. Because Christ said, if we don't, he's going to come when we don't expect it. And so as the crisis of integrity continues to spread, it continues to get worse, it's going to try to take us with it. The devil wants to suck us in to the dishonesty, the immorality that is going on around the world, even if it's just a little bit. He wants you to bend even just a little bit, to start opening that gap. And so we might be tempted to let down, to try to avoid loss, or maybe to attain something, some kind of gain, something we find of value. But we cannot be a part of this world's problems. We cannot. A lack of integrity is exactly why tensions are rising throughout this country and around the world. It is exactly why nations are facing both natural and unnatural disasters. A lack of integrity is why there is such anger and hostility and upheaval and strife going around the world today. And so no matter what the situation is, doesn't matter if it has to do with money, if it has to do with health, doesn't matter if it's pain or pleasure or relationships, or no matter what, no matter how big or small, maintain the quality that God will use to judge each one of us. Integrity.